Gavrilik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Hello and welcome back to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. And with Robbo still on leave, Glenn McFarlane is filling in again. How are you, Macca?
Yeah, g'day, Mick. And all the best to Robbo as he, in his recovery as well.
Yes, mate. And so all roads again lead to COVID here. And we had Daniel Andrews announcing the lifting of restrictions midnight Tuesday night. But sadly for AFL, or Australian rules, no crowds in Victoria for at least the next 2 weeks. So that leaves us with rounds 22 and 23 with some limited crowds. Then you've got the bye round and then the finals. It's very hard to see capacity crowds. In fact, you can put a line through capacity crowds, 100,000. I mean, what could we get to? And does the AFL need to be looking at alternatives like Perth?
I think you've got to keep the alternatives on the line as well, Mick. Everything is edging towards the AFL, desperately keen to have them in Melbourne this year as best as we can. It's going to come back to the crowds. We know that. I'm really hoping that we can get, is it possible we could get 80% to the MCG for the grand final? That's what I'm hoping for. Whether it's going to be a different sort of look in terms of getting crowds in at different times. I think some of the food and beverage options, if that happens, is going to be a real concern, and that's going to be very different to what we've been used to in the past. But gee, it's a problem if we have to take the entire final series to Perth, I would have thought, don't you?
Yeah, I do. But if you've got this Delta variant hanging around and you're pulling 80% capacity crowds, Macca, that's going to be a hard sell with these health authorities who shut us down at the drop of a hat. So I don't know which way it'll go, but I'm interested in your view. And I hadn't given this a lot of thought until we had David Kosh on 3AW Friday night. And we asked him about this push, which sort of grown legs in the last week, or certainly a debate as to whether you should be fully vaccinated before you attend a football match again. Certainly, you know, mooted for this year's finals and definitely for next year. I hadn't given it a lot of thought, but now I think about it, I think it makes sense. I know that I'll probably get bashed for saying it, because there's a lot of people who, for whatever reason, I can't comprehend it, they don't like vaccinations. There's some people who don't even vaccinate their own kids.
Mate.
But maybe that's where we're going to go, the vaccination passport down the track.
Yeah, I think that's the way we're headed for sure. And it was a really interesting interview that you guys did with David Kosh. He's obviously really strongly supportive of it. Certainly the AFL, I think, would love to see that happen. The state government would love to see that happen. I'm a bit like you. I had a long think about that over the weekend after listening to that interview. It's what happens around the world, Mick. That's the thing we've got to get our head around. It's what's happening in big sport in the UK and in the States in periods as well. But certainly, even in a theatre sense, it's what's happening in theatres as well in the UK and Europe. And I think we've probably got to get our head around it. There's got to be some exemptions, I think. Certain people can't get the vaccination for various reasons here and there. I can't see how we can have that for the start of this year's final series if we are going to have games in Melbourne, purely because not enough people have had the option, the younger people, you and I are a little bit older, Mick, to actually have access to the vaccination. So I think this year's final series is probably a little soon for that. But
no, I agree with that.
Yeah, make no mistake, this is what's going to happen next year, I would think. But I do say, and I'm with you, I've had one jab of the AstraZeneca, and in a couple of weeks' time, I'll go back and get my second one. I think this is the way of the future, and it's while we will need to have some exemptions in regard to this. This is the only way we can guarantee footy going ahead properly next year and having crowds there.
Only 7% of Victorians are fully vaccinated at the moment, so that would make sense that we couldn't do it this year. Actually, I've got my first jab booked in for 3 p.m. this afternoon, and I am
really
I'm in the sort of David
straight after that, Nick.
I'm in the David Zaharakis anti needle contingent. I do not like needles. In fact, I'd rather probably break my ankle again and have a needle. That's how much I detest them. But I'll be doing it. And how'd you pull up after your AstraZeneca?
Well, I went in a little bit apprehensive, but had to do it. And again, I'm not a massive needles fan, but they're a necessary evil, and you've got to do it. And so basically, I was fine that night, absolutely fine. I'm thinking, how good am I? The next day was a little bit flat and had some chills. That was about it for, you know, 6 or 8 hours, but nothing bad. I continued on working and all fine. My wife had no, she's had both vaccinations. She's had the two. She had no issues with either of them. So, you know, I think you'll be fine, Mick. I know you're nervous, but you'll be absolutely fine. And you're doing service.
One of the reasons you probably felt sick is the way that your football club, Collingwood, is travelling, which is a good segue, because whilst Daniel Andrews was announcing the lifting of those restrictions, a development in the Collingwood boardroom brawl, which has been simmering in the background for a long time. You had Jeff Brown come out yesterday on Monday and have a direct crack at Mark Quarter, which I thought was a bit of an escalation of things, but then it really taken a twist today, and with Francis Galbally, who was Collingwood's solicitor for about 20 years, he's lodged a Supreme Court application to force Collingwood to hand over that membership register that has been delayed and delayed and delayed, which David Hatley originally was trying to get access to. And now with the QCs involved, going to the Supreme Court, I think it's becoming a bit more serious for Mark Quarter and the Collingwood incumbent board. And I reckon there's a good chance that this EGM is expedited.
So when you say expedited, you've been all over this story. When you say expedited, how quickly could it possibly happen? Collingwood and Supreme Court, gee, there's some headlines in that. But how quickly can this be expedited, do you think?
Well, if the judge, you know, I don't want to preempt what's said, but the application is pretty clear that they think that Collingwood has no choice but to hand over that register of members. And if a judge agrees with that and it happens, you could have a situation where, and another thing there could be that the judge might make a determination as to when he thinks that whether there should be an EGM called sooner rather than later. But this could fast track it to the point where you could have it, say, within the next 60 days.
Wow.
And then you'd have a campaign. I think there's like a 21-day window where you sort of have to announce it, and then you could have campaigning after that or in the lead-up. But, I reckon within 2 months, if the other – they've been quite clever, Collingwood, in that they brought forward their AGM, the annual general meeting, from February to December, sort of, I think, in the hope of, whilst it might have been seen as, you know, as a olive branch, it was probably more to make sure that the other mob ran out of time. But this decision to go to the Supreme Court, I think, would have blindsided Collingwood. And it's fascinating to see your football club tearing itself apart, Maka.
You'd be loving this too, Mick, wouldn't you? So it's just an utter edifying. It has been all year. It really has been a horrible 12 months, or maybe not 12 months, but, you know, you look back from that loss, all the things that have gone wrong since that loss to Geelong in the semi-final last year. You think about all the excitement of the West Coast win and the Dirty Pies. It's just fallen apart, this football club. I think on the field they can get it back relatively quickly if they can get the right coach. And, you know, that's obviously something that the club is going through at the moment. But off the field, it seems like so far from being resolved. And I think only Collingwood supporters would know this, that we've seen situations in the past where there's been massive boardroom brawls. There's been some incredible bitter, and it hasn't happened for quite some time, but there's been some bitter relationships split, friendships split forever. And we're heading down that path again. Do you think, if you're placing odds right now on who's the president of Collingwood next year, Mick, who would it be?
Well, I've said for months, if they get an EGM on, which now seems, I'll be interested to see how this court situation plays out. But if it goes to a vote, Jeff Brown will win in a landslide.
He would win. So absolutely.
I'd say $1.05, Jeff Brown to be Collingwood president by Christmas. And that will lead to some major changes to the look of the club. What do you think of Eddie Maguire's recent rants about lunatics at the fringe? And he's struggling to let go, Eduardo.
He was all over it, wasn't he? And seemed like the passion that was there was a little bit over the top, you would have thought. But you can see his frustration there. This footy club is, again, tearing itself apart, which you don't want. Is there any option that Mark Corder and the board could potentially try and name that coach ASAP to try and get a kick along with the members? And it'd have to be the right coach. That was seen as a possibility from their end, but you know, maybe that doesn't really matter in the end if there is an EGM, which you don't want a situation where you've got a split board. That would be the worst possible scenario for Collingwood. This is a decision that needs to be made well and truly. So it's either Mark Corder and his board or it's Jeff Brown and his board. Anything else would be a complete disaster going forward.
No, I think the Collingwood supporters are smart enough to separate the search for a coach and the subcommittee, the Graham Wright and Lucuria are the main football people on that. There are two directors on there, but I think you can separate the appointment of a coach with who sits in the boardroom. But we'll see how it plays out, Mac. Let's move on to the next one. You wrote Sam Mitchell's book, The Hawthorn Four-Time Premiership Winning Midfielder Turned Assistant Coach. How do you think Sam would have appreciated the media storm around the succession plan and the twist in the story when Caroline Wilson almost issued him a warning about I'm not sure what exactly the warning was about, maybe alluding to things she knew that he'd said or something. But tell us how you think Sam Mitchell would have appreciated being in the eye of the storm.
He wouldn't be worried about a warning from Caroline Wilson, I can guarantee you that. Mitch's book was called Relentless, and that's the way he is. Like, he calls it as he sees it. He's a straight shooter. He wouldn't be at all worried about what Caroline Wilson has said. Had a really good chat to him last week, and he feels like he's in a good place. And he feels like while there's still a lot of work to do to work out the roles for next year, that it can work, as strange as that looks from the outside. I found Caroline's was almost a veiled threat, like in a strange way. And I found that bizarre what she was sort of suggesting about Sam. I mean, we are talking about, you know, a guy whose integrity is pretty strong in that sense, but I couldn't really fathom what she was getting at with that. I would think at this stage, you've got to take Alistair Clarkson at his word, and you've got to take Sam Mitchell at their word that's going to happen. And they're going to coach, not in tandem, far from tandem, but that Alistair Clarkson will remain at Hawthorn next year, unless something extraordinary happened. It may not be exactly what both of them want, but it's going to be what both of them will get.
Having had 2 weeks to reflect on the succession plan and I think I've come into a bit of a theory that the hysteria and the Kennett bashing that was going on and the bashing of Hawthorn, this isn't going to work. There were sections of the media, and yes, they probably had some sources, so they were getting information. People don't just make stuff up, but there was a sense of barracking for this thing to not work. And I think that's partly driven by this sort of animosity towards Jeff Kennett, who isn't house trained, who doesn't play by the boys club system, and he rocks the boat and he says it how it is. And I felt, I don't know, tell me if you think I'm going down the wrong path here, but for example, Craig Hutchison's described the succession plan as bad governance. Which part of sitting down as a board, discussing whether Alistair Clarkson should go on, discussing whether we've got his replacement right here under our nose in Sam Mitchell, which part of that is not actually governance, decision-making? That's what boards do. You might not like the decision. You might pick it apart. You might say it ain't going to work. But you can't say it's bad governance. Now, bad governance, Macca, would be flogging finals tickets above their face value. That would be bad governance. So I just don't cop this. I think that they wanted to make more of the story because largely they wanted it to fail. And I think that was largely because Jeff Kennett was front and centre.
Yeah, well, that was one of the great drive-bys there, Michael, I've ever heard. I liked it. It was interesting. I think you're right about Jeff Kennett as well. He doesn't play by the AFL playbook. He completely doesn't, and makes no. He actually enjoys, as you know, more than anyone. You know, going against the grain of what the AFL community is thinking. He's saying it's very good governance because he obviously believes that you know that Alistair Clarkson had been at Hawthorn for too long. Think about it; it is a long time. When you think he took over in late 2004, that's an eternity ago in footy terms. And while he's still a very good coach, you know, they did not want to lose Sam Mitchell. They seriously believe Sam Mitchell will be an outstanding coach. I'm not sure they handled it brilliantly. One thing they did do, Mick, which most clubs don't do, they kept it in-house briefly, didn't they? It may not have stayed.
It didn't leak out. No.
It didn't leak out, which I'm still astounded by that that didn't leak out. Which is quite amazing in a footy sense.
Yeah, I think it's called good governance.
Well, I think that is. Like, maybe they didn't dot the I's and cross the T's with everything in regard to the role.
To answer that, though, it was never going to be easy because, as they said, the Nathan Buckley thing triggered a chain of events that they probably weren't ready for. They were going down that road. I think Kennett and Clarkson had been talking about the fact this would probably be his last contract. There's no surprise here, but they said as much that Buckley brought it to a head. Clarkson, you know, off the back of that, went to the club. And he, what's that clicking noise you got there, Macca?
Is it me?
Yeah, it is you.
How is that me? Okay, is that better?
Yeah, it's a lot better.
It was sitting on my computer. Sorry. When do you want to go back a little?
No, that's all right.
No, it's still there. It's because my phone, it was sitting on the computer, yeah?
All good.
I was assuming it was you.
No. Where was I?
It's still there. Do you want me to move?
Yeah.
Do you want to start the Clarkson thing again? Do you want me to shut
No, I'll tell you what we'll do. I'll tell you what we'll do. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about David Teague.
Beautiful.
Now, Mac, I'm not sure what was going on there, but have you finished with the Clarkson debate?
I have, in the sense that I'm not sure what was going on there either. A little bit of technical difficulties. I'm a long way from you. You'd be living in Brighton somewhere. I'm living out in the northern suburbs.
Not in Brighton. Sticking
in the northern suburbs, sticking with my family roots out here. But with the Clarkson thing, I honestly think, you know, we don't know whether it's going to work, but we're pretty convinced it's going to happen next year. And I think what Sam Mitchell will do, he'll take the next year to just, I've never known a person who has delved into, you know, trying to work out what coaching is and what coaching should be more than Sam. He'll get it right. He'll get it wrong a little bit early on, but I think he'll end up getting it right and will be an outstanding coach.
What do you make of the Carlton situation with the David Teague? It was a pretty ordinary loss against North Melbourne. I'm staggered at Jimmy Bartel calls it the defensive transition, how easy Carlton are to move the ball once they turn it over the other way. And North Melbourne, the bottom place team, were just cutting a sway through the Blues all over the ground and running the ball into an open goal. It was pretty shambolic, and that's the part of their game that Teague's been unable to address. Do you think that they will pull the trigger? And there's a second aspect to this which drives me insane. Did you notice the Carlton quiet changes to the club constitution that they're trying to push through, which would require 5% of members to be able to call an EGM? This is the thing that drives me insane.
You don't like this, do you?
No, it's the way that clubs are seizing control of the club and it making it almost impossible for rival tickets and for members to sort of rise up. And yeah, look what's happening at Collingwood. Why should it be so difficult and go to court and all this garbage and obfuscating? It drives me insane. I think that head office are quite happy for it because they don't want EGMs. They don't want democracy. But, you know, it is a bugbear. It's pretty dry. Some of our listeners probably don't care. But to me, the board serves at the pleasure of the members. That's the model we have. The members are the club. And it's becoming far too difficult by design for members to have a say in the direction of their club.
And I think what you say is right, and that's why in a lot of ways there's a groundswell of discontent with Collingwood supporters. They feel like they've lost control of their own footy club.
Macca, like Peter Costello said, they'll be going to the voting polls with baseball bats.
Yep, absolutely, and that's what will happen, and it could again happen at Carlton.
Yeah, but on Carlton, right? You could stomach it if the board actually could run a good football club, but for 20 years, the Carlton Football Club has failed. You talk about governance. They've hired and fired that many coaches. You know, Brett Ratton, Mick Malthouse, Bolton, Teague, you know, hired and fired. The same directors. You know, I don't know what the stat is. There's about 50 billionaires in Australia. Carlton had four of them. Yet they weren't able. So if you're going to sort of seize more power away from your membership base, at least be able to run a good organisation. And it really drives me insane. I feel sorry for Carlton supporters.
Did you ever think you would ever say that? I feel sorry for Carlton supporters in your lifetime.
Well, I come from a Carlton family. my stepfather and stepbrothers and their side of the family are all Carlton maniacs. When I was a kid, I'd have to go to Princess Park and I'd be dressed head to toe in my Richmond kit. You know, I'd be 7, 8 years old. I'd have the boots, the jumpers, number 8 Disco Roach. Disco. And all the people in the Carlton outer would yell, "You're at the wrong game, kid." And I said, "No shit."
This obviously trained you beautifully for taking on big organisations and the like. I always say that I can't believe I'm starting to feel a little bit sorry for Carlton as well.
Carlton supporters.
Yeah, no, I meant Carlton supporters because Baird Inkham, if any club ruined my childhood, I was a reasonably well-adjusted human being until I went through grand final heartache after grand final heartache. Do I sound like I'm angry? I've had therapy, and I just got over the therapy, Mick, and then 2018 came along. Now, thank goodness it wasn't Carlton, but it was West Coast. So I've been back in therapy since the 2018, and they keep bringing me back to 1979 and 1981 and in 1980 when Richmond destroyed us in a grand final. Any wonder I've got some issues?
Well, a lot of faith is being put in the Luke Sayers, who's replacing Mark Legutice as the president of Carlton. You know,
how long's he been on the board for, Mick?
A great question. I think at least a decade. So yep. He's been there, but he is seen as someone, you know, I saw Caro say or write that he's in a hurry to stamp his authority and to make change. So we'll see how he goes. But, you know, if we keep going down this road in the next 12 months, then maybe they do need the EGM.
It'd be interesting, wouldn't it? And obviously, it's going to come back to David Teague. There's been all sorts of rumours, you know, swirling around the footy world in recent days and recent weeks about what's going to happen. They're getting very close to the end of that external review and finding the details there of what's going on. David Teague still says he's got implicit faith in this group. It remains to be seen whether the board's got implicit faith in David Teague. And losses like Saturday, that really hurts going forward, doesn't it? So
they got a lot of talent, though. I mean, they got Walsh, who's, you know, could be the best young player in the comp. They got the Coleman medalist, although he's done his toe, so maybe he'll get mowed down. But, you know, they got Charlie Curnow coming back. It's possible, like when Hardwick said at the end of 2016, hey, we're actually not that bad. But the difference there, of course, is Richmond had played in some finals. So I don't know. I feel like he's under pressure, but to me, the spotlight shouldn't be on the coach.
I agree.
Should be on people in the boardroom and the hot people that they hire in to run football operations and the CEO and whatnot. But anyway, there's plenty of little firestorms all around the competition. I was very skeptical, Macca, of the Olympic Games going ahead.
Well,
just because of COVID and there'd be no crowds.
But fair enough.
Isn't it great to see? I think the world needed to wrap its arms around itself. And, you know, the swimming's been great. I haven't really noticed the lack of atmosphere at all, actually. Commentators are back here in Melbourne, yet it's been great. We've won some gold and I'm really looking forward to the athletics.
Yeah, I agree. The swimming's been fantastic. How good have the girls been? There's just some great stories in that swimming team, isn't there? And, you know, I was skeptical of skateboarding in the Olympics and stuff like that, but I found myself watching that, Mick, and like, even I had a, you know, I know very little about rowing, but I've done a little bit of rowing, tiny bits in recent months, and I did an interview with Josh Booth, who's in the Australian rowing team, and unfortunately they didn't win a medal and the like, but he's a doctor at you know, he's an intern doctor at Royal Melbourne Hospital, and so he fought, you know, obviously on the COVID front line last August, sort of July, August for in Melbourne, and he's now at the Olympic Games, and he said to me, I think this is a great opportunity for the world to just put their arms around each other. And while there's going to be no crowds there or anything like that, this is an opportunity to think good about sport and to think good about the world, because we've had such a really crappy time of it of late. And I think that's what I've sort of taken away. I'm really watching it with my kids. I don't know about your kids, are a little bit too young, maybe.
Mick, no, my 6-year-old's getting right into it and actually gave me flashbacks of 1980. I was six. It was at Moscow. Yeah, we were living in Canberra at the time, and I would sneak out of bed and watch the rowing and stuff. So I sort of got hooked on sport at six, and my young son William is the same. He's just starting to take an interest in the Olympics. So I think it's fantastic. I'm glad the schools are open again, because when I was in grade 4 in 84, they had the Olympics. My teacher, Mrs. Scott, Mount Eliza Primary, had the TV going the whole time watching the Olympics, and that's how you get hooked on sport.
That's it, Macca. And that's beautiful. I was a bit the same, and like at primary school and that, I'd used to – the teacher would give you the car keys, and you'd be able to go out to the teacher's car. This is grade 5,
Hang
Mick.
On, what? You were driving?
Yeah, go out and turn the radio on so you can actually – this is – it's not pre-TV, but it's we didn't have TVs in the classroom. I went to a government school, so we didn't really have TVs.
Hang on.
This
is a government school, mate. Man, Eliza.
Oh, there you go. I like it.
What was your primary school?
I went to a great primary school called Kingsbury Primary School, which is in the northern suburbs, and I went to Greenwood High School, which is now Bundoora Secondary College, and one of the guys in my class was played more than 100 games for Australia in hockey. Jay Stacey was a absolute star. We didn't have a lot coming out of Greenwood High School, but we had Jay Stacey, and I think we had Brian Cannon from Pseudo Echo. So
that's not bad. Well, there I you went go. To Peninsula School, and we had the Australian Crawl. We had Stuart Lowe, Lockie Whitfield, David.
You got
Hill,
us covered.
Nathan Jones. Oh, look, we probably, yeah. It never used to be a good footy school when I was there, I tell you, but they're getting better. Anyway, Macca, we've totally digressed. When we come back after the break, I want to talk to you about the transition of newsrooms, because you are a bit of a dinosaur. You were there when they had the old press in the bottom floor.
A dinosaur.
Of the You're an older type. You've had the AstraZeneca. I want to talk to you about the transition of newsrooms. Now, Macca, you had the great pleasure and honour of working in the old Herald building in Flinders Street. I never did. I didn't join the paper until 1998, and the Herald and the Sun merged in 1990. In fact, I think the first Herald Sun was the day after the 1990 grand final, was it not, which your
Correct.
Team won.
Correct.
And Darryl
exactly.
Simmons had the front page.
Darryl Timms had the front page, and I think it was the same weekend that Kerry Packer had that famous heart attack at the polo, and I think that was a really big decision where the paper had to work out Collingwood on the front or Kerry Packer on the front. They went a bit of both, and there's that great photograph, that halftime photograph of Lee Matthews having a crack at Terry Danaher as they're walking up the race at the MCG.
I have that front page framed on our lounge room, not our lounge room, in our office at home. But tell us about the early days of the Herald and before the merger. Well, when did you start? Were you pre-merger?
So I was just pre-merger. I was November 1989. I somehow fluked a job in there.
At the Herald or the Sun?
No, I was at the Sun. I was the Sun. Right. We always saw the Herald as a little bit more highbrow than we were. So I was lucky enough. I always wanted to work on the Sun. I read the Sun every day from the time I was a little kid. back to front, Sport always first, and then to the other side. But starting there in 89, it was a pretty imposing place. You know, it's obviously still there now, but internally there was so many different little nooks of crannies, which a lot of people used to use for different reasons, obviously. But the one thing that got to me when I first got there, so November 89 I started, was you'd be sitting at your desk, Mick, and you'd be tapping away on a story or whatever, and I didn't do too many early, but then the floor would start rumbling and you think, what the hell's going on here? Feels like an earthquake. Like there's an earthquake going on, and the computers would rumble, the old style computers would rumble. What it would be is downstairs, the presses are actually starting. So we used
incredible.
To print both.
What time would they start?
Various times, because the Herald would go through, I think they their last edition, and I'm sure someone will correct me here because I never worked on it, but that would start from sort of, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, even a little bit earlier, and would run through to the afternoon with, they'd probably have 3 or 4 editions. And then obviously the same thing would happen in the night. So we worked a bit of night shift, but the floors would rumble like you would not believe when the presses are going. And Mick, there was one aspect to it that I reckon was amazing, but you'd never get away with it now, is that there used to be a thing called the subs club. So basically, the end of your shift, it might be 12 o'clock at night, you've worked on the sun, and what they would do is they would wheel in 10 or 12 slabs of beer, and the subs would then sit around. The subs are obviously the people that, you know, sub-edit the copy, and they would sit around and drink beer until probably 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, some of them, until the Herald guys were coming in. So there was almost this handover to the Herald guys coming in the next day. So it was the subs club. You wouldn't get away with it these days, would you?
Nah, and people smoking at their desks.
Absolutely. Smoking at the desks and stuff like that. So it was amazing. But when you think back then, there was no internet then. So we couldn't just jump on the internet and say, oh, who played in this particular game here or there? And we had a thing called copy takers, which you would be well and truly aware of and would have dealt with them over the journey, where you had to, we didn't have computers. So yeah, well, we did in the office, but not external computers when you're at the footy. So what you'd have to do is ring through your story to a copy taker, who's obviously a very speedy typer, but sometimes the translation between your words and the words that would appear in the paper would be different, including one famous one being someone playing on a hardboard plank. Very good, mate.
You know, when I started, there were copy takers, but it was sort of right. There were only a couple, and it was dying art. But when I worked over in New York for the New York Post for a stint, they actually had they've got a bit of a different system. But there were some journos out on the road who would ring in stories that actually would never write physically their own stories. They'd sort of
really
ring it in to an expert who would, and they'd just give them the information, and yeah, the next day the story would appear under their name. So it's quite weird. But do you think that newsrooms are better now or worse than
there's good and bad bits. It's a little bit more sterile these days. It's a little bit more sterile, and I think people like a bit more quiet. In the old days, it was as rowdy a place as you could imagine. Even just before edition, there was lots of swearing and all sorts of stuff going on. So probably somewhere in the middle. I think it's a little bit more sterile now, but I suppose whatever the case may be, we still got the job done in any circumstance, whether it's now. We'd be loving to get back into the office. Through the pandemic, I've barely been in the office for, you know, throughout 18-month period. So it's been really weird, and it's hard to communicate. I think it's a little bit awkward, isn't it?
Who were the sort of doyens, the superstars, the senior football reporters of that era, and what do you think they would make of the new generation of football reporters, the Tom Browns and the Sammy McClures and Mitch Cleary's and Tom Morris, Sammy Landsberger? You know, how different were those senior types, or the main news gatherers of those days to today's?
The one thing that they've still all got is that thirst for news and that thirst to be first. I think probably back then maybe it was a little bit more, obviously you know, the thirst was always important, but you could wait. Like, I can understand the urgency now of people needing desperately to get that story as quickly and as urgently as they can. Back then, if you had a story, you could sit on it and you might be okay because the TVs probably weren't going to get it unless it was Eddie Maguire. You know, you basically had newspapers. You didn't have an online section where you could break a story. Excuse me. So I know a lot of people who missed out. Somehow they waited on a story and it didn't work. Now, if you wait 2 minutes, you're gone. You can find a story, and unless you file it as soon as you can, I always want to get it right, and I think most of those guys do as well. You got to get the story right, and I think that was the thing that was drilled into me. Make the extra call. Go the extra yard. You can't be wrong with a story. And, you know, while we have all been wrong with stories, you got to try and get us, you know, there's a fine line and a balance between trying to be first and actually getting it right. I think our guys mostly, by and large, do a really, really good job. Some of the guys back then, like Scotty Palmer, I worked with and still speak to on a regular basis. You know, Mike Sheehan came along, was outstanding. Trevor Grant, the late, great Trevor Grant. I've never seen, you think about the press conferences now that are pretty clinical on TV. We're at the mic, we go to them, but they're pretty clinical. Some of the ones that I went to, Rod Nicholson was another, some of the ones that I went to, and Trevor Grant went there with a coach under pressure, he was so aggressive with the coaches, and it was compelling viewing.
It's quite an interesting point that you raise there, because at the post-game press conference, and no disrespect to the journos who go to them, but they're not the senior journos from around that, but they probably should be, shouldn't they?
Yeah, I agree. Because I reckon when you see Mark Robinson go to a, when you go to see him go to a press conference, he drills right in to the, you know, and you can look on YouTube. There's been a Tony Jones is outstanding. Caro, at a press conference. As well. And a lot of our guys are. So I think we've probably thought that press conferences don't count. But you know what? They really do count in my mind. And some of the best I've been to were not live on camera. Some of it were you're standing around, with three or four journos, and the cameras are not there. But the coach would always give you as much as he could. And then he might give you a little off the record one to go and chase as well. Whereas
Do you reckon Gil should do a weekly press conference at least as well?
I would if I was advising him. Yeah,
well,
I would.
You would advise him not to.
Why?
If you're advising him, because the less you're seen and heard, the better. I mean, that's the way.
Yeah, but I'm not a believer in that. You know me. I'm not a believer in that. I'm like you. I want access to people.
But if you were getting paid $880,000 to be the AFL's media executive, Macca,
can you get me that?
He's not paying you to expose you to the journalist pack once a week.
No,
he's paying you to keep him at a distance from them.
Yeah, but I don't like that. You know that I'm an old style. I'm not saying old, but you called me a dinosaur, but that's okay. I'm an old style journalist who likes access to people, and I think you're not just. And I try to explain this to some of the clubs that you talk to as well, and they know it, but they probably, you know, they're relatively good, but you're actually talking to your members. You're talking to your supporters. You're not. Don't go out there thinking that you're talking to us, the journos. You're actually talking to your members. Get on the front foot. I get really frustrated with some people who want to just not talk about things and want to hide away from things. Get out in the front foot, I reckon.
Yeah, well, there goes
$880,000 job, doesn't it?
Now, just before we go, tell us who's going to fill this last spot in the eight. Giants are currently in there. They beat Essendon, who threw away a golden opportunity to really sew up that spot. Richmond is still hanging it in there, even though they've won once in 6 weeks. Who do you think will fall into eights, and does it really matter? Are they not going to do any damage anyway, are they?
They're not. And can we just put one thing to bed? You talked about Hutchie before. Hutchie and his wild card weekend can just about go away. Get in the bin. We probably should have a top six this year. That's probably what it should be. Who wants a ninth versus 10th wild card weekend? Please spare me that. You're going to be a little, you won't be excited about this, but I think Richmond can still make it. I don't know why. I look at their draw and I think they can win. If they can get over Fremantle, I reckon they potentially can win, you know, two or three of the back end, maybe even four. And I don't know. I'm still keeping them alive. The other clubs have got a slightly tougher draw, I think, as well. So I think Richmond could sneak in. I don't think they can do any damage. But, you know me, I'm a Collingwood supporter trying to preserve this four in a row record that my grandfather played in at Collingwood. So I'm always nervous when Richmond's still in the finals.
You know, you could finish wooden spoon, Collingwood.
Should have win a third in a row. Like, let's hope not. Collingwood could. I don't think they will, but they certainly could, which is a little bit of a concern going forward. I think some of the kids are okay. Well, they
concern
certainly
if you're going to get bit on Josh Dacos and Nick yep. Dacos and
and you traded some of this year's picks away too. So.
Anyway, Matt, we've run out of time. We've got to get back to the Olympics, but we'll chat to you next week. Thanks again, and we won't see you at the footy.
No, hopefully soon. Anyway, Mick.
Good on you, mate.